Morning, and welcome back to everybody. Good to be back, or maybe it's not good to be back, but we're back one way or another. We are here. Welcome everyone to the study session, May City Council for Thursday, August 19th, 2010. I'm going to excuse Councilmember Scott Summers, who has a scheduling conflict this morning. And I don't have to excuse Councilmember Dave Richens because he just walked in. Welcome. You're welcome. Okay, first item on the agenda for today is to review the agenda for next Monday's regular City Council meeting. You can look at page 2. One thing to Mr. Brady, you want to talk about the slight change in the format of our agenda? Why don't you do that?
Mayor and Council, you'll notice that the agenda is slightly different in the sense that, excuse me, we've moved all the consent items are at the very beginning of the agenda, and if there is a item that will be off consent, it will be moved to the back of the agenda, regardless of which section of the agenda. We're preparing the agenda this way now so we can get used to this new format as we begin our transition over the next couple of months to our e-agenda process. This is kind of allowing us to kind of work within the parameters of the electronic software that we'll be using to move this forward. And it's a format that's actually fairly common across the region that's seen. But just, I think we're sometimes used to seeing the asterisks or whatever throughout the agenda to identify items that are off consent. Now, obviously, if council just says any time, we can pull items off consent, but the format will be, as you look for them, we'll put those at the end of the agenda, regardless of which section, whether it's a contract or a zoning case, we'll put those at the end. Just a slight difference.
And it's not readily apparent, this agenda.
Well, I know this one probably wasn't the best one to start with. So. And there's only
okay. One item. Thank you. Page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, item 5F, I am having a difficult time understanding how this program works and what the revenue. We talk about what the expenditure is and that it's covered by the revenue, but we don't talk about what the revenue is. So, if anyone has any information, that'd be awesome.
Mayor and Councilmember Higgins, the printed utility bill coupons are part of the utility bill insert program that we ran a pilot program in 2009, and the revenues that come in for that cover the cost of the open line newsletter and departmental inserts that we have on every other month basis. So the revenue comes in, that offsets the costs of the printing.
Do we have an idea of, like, total revenue that brings in?
It's about somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000. So it covers the cost of the printing, and then there's another $15,000 that comes on top of it.
Could we back up a little bit? Because we jumped right into the middle of an explanation, and those people who don't have background material, could we explain a little bit as to what this is? When you say you started a program in 2009.
The Open Line newsletter goes out every other month to 165,000 utility bill customers.
It's stuffed inside the utility bill. It's an envelope.
Exactly, along with the utility bill.
Right.
It goes out to 155,000 households and 10,000 businesses.
And this newsletter has?
It has information about city programs, services. It's a two-sided newsletter, and it's one of, outside of our Mesa Channel 11 and the website, it's one of our primary ways of communicating with our residents.
Okay. And obviously, this is, and I'm getting real elementary here, but I want people to understand what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have to pay for that, and the paper and the printing to do this newsletter, and with the budget cuts the way they were, this was something that, you know, was right on the edge, and so in an effort to try and maintain this line of this open line of communications, we sought other ways to cover those expenditures.
Mayor and Council, actually, we had eliminated open line and the communications out of the utility billings probably 3 or 4 years ago. And then we found an opportunity to, if you would, privatize the opportunity to pay for this from private funding through using the inserts, the, I don't know if they're not certain, not all advertising, I guess what we should say, and coupons that were inserted into the utility bills. And we're able to do that and raise enough
We don't like to use the word advertising, informational participation.
Informational outreach.
Information.
Yes.
Thank you. So we were able to use that mechanism as a means to offset or pay for the cost for the
local businesses pay for the privilege of being in here, and that money is
their information.
Yes, and we've had 30 to 40 Mesa businesses that have participated in the program in the 18 months that the program's been running.
So, and that offsets the cost and allows of the open line and allows us to include that open
line. And this allows us to set up a mechanism that our costs, we actually run the printing through our
print shop.
Thank you. And to get that reimbursed by the communications inserts for the companies that are, they're paying for that. So we're getting our cost offset. So we're making sure there's a fully.
I just want to make sure everyone understands.
And all the costs are covered outside of the city's costs. So the good news is we brought back the communications, the newsletter, in, the open line inserts, and the departmental inserts into the utility bills. And the way we were able to do that was to pass along a cost to the Mesa businesses that allows them to put an insert into the envelope at the same time. And this is just our means of being able to recover back those costs.
And we've actually had, there's more participation from departments in providing ads into the, or inserts in because there is no cost to the departments. We have two opportunities every other month, and Mesa Arts Center has done it, Parks and Rec. We've had Water Resources, so we've had a lot of departments that have participated in that, and it's at no cost to them because it's offset by the informational pieces that the businesses purchase.
Okay, Councilman Richards.
Have any of our utility bill customers complained about getting advertising in their utility bills?
You know, we've had a few comments, but overall, I don't know that I've gotten a tremendous amount. But we obviously there's been a few comments. But well, one of the comments that comes from businesses, really, the most common call we get is, "Well, how do I get in and how do I participate?" And so,
but from customers over the couple years that we've been doing this, excuse me, there's only been a couple people that have made comments.
I think.
It's pretty low. Wow.
And it's interesting. We've probably had three or four calls, and once I explain the program, they say, "Oh, that's great."
I think as long as we're showing that we're using the proceeds to benefit bringing the communications in, I think people get comfortable with it. We're not using it as a major money raiser.
Councilman Higgins?
And where does that show up, like on a line item, like the revenue from this? Because
it's I'm not sure that technically how it is. We have a billable work order that the
print shop pays the bill, and then at the end of each month they bill public relations.
Okay.
And then we bill the contracted vendor that does that, and that goes that revenue comes back into the billable.
Well, and you know, I ask this because this line just says the coupon cost of the coupon is offset by the revenues generated, right. But it's right. That's so vague of a sentence.
The revenue comes back into our city's general fund, and it's sourced with one of our thousands of different revenue codes. And it would be in a very, it's not in our budget book broken down to that detail. It would be in our accounting detail, clear down to the specific revenue codes of those things.
Great, thank you,
Councilor Fenter.
So this item's bid, low bidder gets it. I see it's a renewal. Is that how that worked?
That is correct.
Is that a Mesa business?
No.
This is Century Graphics?
No, I don't believe
it's,
they are.
Okay. It's Phoenix, I think.
Okay. Different question? Or a different item? Oh, okay. Okay. Dina, that covered it? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And actually, one of the reasons I wanted you to explain is I think this is one of the creative things that staff has come up with to provide services, but in a manner that fits within the financial realities that we have. And it's great to be creative like this and to make things happen. So thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh, other item on page 6.
I have a question on 5G, and I wonder if Beth could help with that. We've had a lot of construction at Dobson and Guadalupe for a long time, and now this is another major project, El Dorado and Guadalupe. And I was just wondering, Beth, if you could explain the need for this project and what it entails so that we can make sure we the residents understand why we need to do this at this point in time. And Catherine, thank you.
Sure. Well, we do have a program to inspect our sewer pipes. And as part of that program, we did discover that there are some significant blockages in this line. It's really not functioning the way that it should anymore, and it has caused some problems in the area. It's a pipe from 1975, so unfortunately it is time to go in and replace it.
Because of what your inspections have shown, is there a possibility of the line breaking or having...
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, it isn't working as it should even today.
So we're talking about blockages in an old line. Are we talking heart surgery or a sewer line?
Well, are we doing a stent? Or
wake up, Kathy.
Sorry. I'm not very awake this morning. Yeah. No, it's not functioning the way that it should. It's got significant blockages. It's very restricted. So the flow can't get through there the way that it needs to.
So this would be a complete replacement?
Yeah.
Yes.
And can you describe what the timeline might be?
Yeah, it's actually located to the west of the Dobson-Guadalupe intersection, which, as you mentioned, is under construction right now. And we hate to do this right now, but when we found it, when we went through and inspected it, it's in such bad condition. We're concerned that it might fail. So we're going to go in after the Dobson-Guadalupe project is complete, and then we need to replace it. It does cross Guadalupe from north to south, so, and it is deep. So we're looking at, I believe it was on about a 90-day construction schedule or less, but we will be across all the lanes.
Yeah, I thought it was significantly less.
Yeah,
more like
it's a short-term project.
Yeah.
But it will be significant restrictions across Guadalupe.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Anything else on page 6? Page 7, Councilmember Higgins.
Item 7A, Mayor. This maybe Mr. Wesley could explain this. This was on the agenda a couple months ago, and I know that intent was so that when the zoning code rewrite works through the system, we, the city, don't have to put signs up on every piece of property we own. But it doesn't affect the average person who's rezoning. I can't find that. This still doesn't make sense when I read this.
Okay. Mayor and Council, I might have Gordon Sheffield come up and help with some of the details also on this, since he actually authored it. That is certainly the intent and the way it is written. And Gordon can explain the details. But before we brought this forward, we just changed it to post or notice and thought we could just handle that with the individual applicants of, yes, we still expect you to post. Council wasn't pleased with that approach, so we did go back and rewrite it. It does now clearly require that the applicants for an individual zoning case have to post their property, and it's only for the city in terms of this change to the zoning code that posting requirement is not required.
And maybe if you can just point out that section, that would be great. I just could not see verbiage. Excuse me.
Pardon me, Mayor, Councilmember Higgins. You're asking to point out the particular language in the revised ordinance
section
that would point out specifically that a private property owner is still required to post the property.
Right.
Okay.
And that it's only affecting. It's only relating to the city.
Okay. If you take a look at the first page of the ordinance, item H1. The language is, in proceedings initiated by the property owner or representative acting on behalf of the property owner, specifically talks about, shall be published in the newspaper, notice shall be posted, item 1B, a notice of the time and place and purpose of the meeting shall be posted on the property in question at least 5 days in advance of said hearing. That's specifically straight out of state statute. So that is directly to the property owner.
Okay.
And then in terms of the item number H2, it states, in proceedings that are not initiated by the property owner or representative acting on behalf of the property owner. Generally speaking, all zoning cases that you come before you are initiated by either the property owner or an agent of the property owner. It's very rare for a case not to be initiated by the property owner. Those are generally the ones that are initiated by the public. Almost always, if that's done, it's generally by the city itself, by the council, at the direction of the council.
Okay.
And that's so H2 would be the public requirement.
Okay, great, thank you.
Okay.
And the mayor, as long as we're on this item, just a little bit more of an update. We have a couple of notice requirements for rezonings. One has been the posting requirement. The other is the requirement to mail the notice to all the property owners. That's still a requirement that the city will need to meet in terms of adopting the new zoning code. And as we've looked at that and the time frame it's going to take to prepare that notice and get it out, we believe that's going to be best done soon after the first of the year. It's going to be difficult to get that done.
Explain that to me, how that works on a citywide zoning change. Are you saying we're going to have to identify every parcel of property that might be impacted by that and send letter notices, or are we going to send a blanket notice that says this might have changed?
Mayor, it'll be more of a blanket notice. While we don't believe that there are any significant changes happening to a piece of property, every zoning district, the standards are changing at least a little bit. There's something a little bit different about every district. So to make sure we're covered, what we plan to do is a notice to all property owners. We are looking at the idea.
I got an idea. We could put it in the open line, which is paid for by businesses, and therefore it doesn't cost us anything.
Very good idea, Mayor.
Thank you.
I think we'll follow up on that idea. In fact, we are planning to use utility billing as a way to notify residents, but we aren't necessarily notifying property owners through that.
What would be the nature of this notice? I mean, what are we going to tell them without scaring the heck out of people for what is – and I guess this is where I have an issue with this, is that it seems like we're getting really, really caught in what – how do I word this? A perceived legalese technicality that I don't believe creates as big a problem. And this is just difference of opinion, and I understand that we can have different opinions on these. But do we not run the risk of creating a bigger problem than we actually have when we're sending out these notices and all of a sudden people are freaked out because they think their property is going to be changed, and we're not changing people's zoning by unilaterally? Are we going to create a bigger problem while being obsessed with a legal technicality?
That
was a loaded question, wasn't it?
It is.
Okay, thank you. It was meant to be.
I'll see what I can do to try to bounce it back. It's a fear that's rooted in reality, quite honestly. In the state of Arizona, there have been cases that have been thrown out where the entire zoning ordinance has been thrown out because of improper notice. It happened to the city of Page. It happened to Maricopa County in the 60s.
And I understand that.
I haven't
felt that the apples to apples comparison, and maybe I need to be educated a little more. I'm still not seeing the direct correlation with what we're doing in those cases you're referring to.
The concern is that in the adoption of a new zoning ordinance, if there is not sufficient notice done according to the letter of the state statute, and that we are not giving the property owner the opportunity to come and comment on that because of that lack of notice, that in effect you can basically invalidate the entire zoning code.
Okay. So is the nature of the notice we're going to give is a general notice that we are making mass changes to this and it's like a posting for these? That's the nature of the notice?
Our intent is that by sent the requirement is if there's a perception that there's a reclassification, so to speak, in the rezoning, and that the term they use is rezoning, and the changes that we're making are perceived to be consistent enough to be a rezoning, then we have to send out notice to every property owner in the city, all property owners in the city, to give them notice of the hearings and give them the opportunity to comment. And the concern is that if we don't take the time to announce our intentions before we send out the letter, then just kind of being hit with this letter is going to cause a lot of confusion.
So are we planning after this notice goes out to have maybe a dedicated or special public hearing in addition to those public hearings that we've already been having over the last year now, or year and a half, or 2 years?
Yeah, let's step back to the process, because council is going to continue to work on updates to the zoning code. At some point here, hopefully before the end of the year, we need the council to kind of get in position where it says we're comfortable enough to say this is pretty close to what we're looking for. You haven't adopted it, but we need to get it out there so that we can tell the public this is what's being considered by the council as far as the zoning code that's being considered. And one of the things... John, do you want to go through that?
I was just going to say, we do have this sheet that outlines the...
So as part of getting that, and you can see some of the timelines that John has put on here, to getting a draft or final draft ready by sometime in October, And what we want to be able to do then, before we even send out these notices that are required by state law, is that we want to do a lot of publicity and outreach through, again, through our famous newsletter now, and through notices in the paper, so that the community, even before they get these letters, they will hopefully, some of them, as much as we can, reach out and explain what they're going to be getting. The other thing we talked about, too, is you can imagine that throughout the city, there are different impacts of different areas. Obviously, in the downtown area, with some of the things we're trying to do to create a little more multi-use flexibility in the zoning code, that letter may want to be a little more specific to that area. So we've talked about it's not going to be the same letter for the whole city. We may try to break that down a little
bit. Well, it may be additional letters, because if you're going to put something in open line or in the utility bills, that would be more of a general type of thing. And what you're saying is you might follow it up
with
their areas.
Right. And the open line will say you'll be getting a letter, and generally, you know, so that people, even when they, hopefully before they even get the letter, we can start explaining what the purpose of the letter is.
Okay.
So that's the idea, is to try to help everyone feel comfortable that even before they get the letter, or even when they do get the letter, they understand they have the opportunity.
So we're basically going to send a letter to every parcel. Off the tax off the property tax records, we're going to send a letter to every parcel owner in the city.
Yes,
and we'll be clear in that letter. This really only affects you if you're going to be doing some type of
change
or whatever in your property.
And in theory, most of the changes that affect most property owners are actually increasing the flexibility.
Right.
Of what they can do with their property. So we're
I hope it goes beyond in theory. I hope in practice what we're gearing towards, we don't have a diminution of like using that word.
It shouldn't affect values. It may affect.
Well, but if it affects uses, I mean, our big concern is that we pass something that restricts existing usage in a way that is unintended.
Right.
Or that it does create value, because if you've restricted use, the next logical step is that you've decreased value, and then we run into all the 207 problems and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, we're assuming that all the changes we're making here are for the benefit. We understand that there may be unintended time where that may not happen, but I guess what I'm concerned with is how we communicate will create the fear factor that everyone's scared to death that we're somehow
right.
Through some, you know, conspiracy, we're taking over and doing mass unilateral changes in their zoning code.
And we've had
we've now overall restricted their use. And I see that as a real issue and a potential outcome if we don't do this exactly.
Right. And we've had this conversation. Gordon will be submitting ideas about what should be good in the letter, and then we'll have others looking at it too, from making sure we're communicating in a positive way to make sure. Gordon will give us some of the technical. We'll make sure that we word this in a way so that it doesn't create that fear. We've had this conversation, and that's why we want to use a lot of communications even before they get the letter.
Yeah, non-legal.
No, that's the whole purpose of the open line.
Yeah, non-legal. But tell them real world what's happening.
Right.
The legal will take care of itself through the actual proceedings. Now, just jumping to the end. So this will then come through. You're anticipating, looking at your schedule, that we have all these education, but then it comes through as a normal, ordinary zoning change through the normal P&Z, and we're not creating any special type of separate process.
Mayor, that's correct. This will go through just like any other zoning case, just with more notice and more opportunities.
Right. But when it comes down to the actual meetings and those kind of things, it's going to be as if it were an average zoning case. It's just that before that, we're going to, because of the scope, we're just going to overload, hopefully, the community with information so they understand exactly what's happening.
That's correct,
Mayor.
Gotcha. I don't know if that went beyond what you wanted to ask, Dina, but you raised a lot of questions. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Lost my place. Page 8. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I have a question on item 7C. I know this is an introduction. It's a freeway landmark monument sign. When the council adopted the measure to permit these, It was very specific and designed primarily to benefit retail establishments close to the freeway, and it had very specific guidelines and elements that needed to be met. As I read this application does not comply with at least 9 requirements in our city code for the placement of a sign. I'm not aware of any other freeway landmark monument sign in the valley for a similar use, an educational institution. And I just want to clarify what the staff recommendation was in this case and why.
Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh, as you said, the council did adopt guidelines that outline the policy and the direction of council on where these signs should go. Did talk about general plan designation of commercial and being at least 30 acres, being at the intersection of a freeway and arterial street, and several other things. This particular request did not meet those guidelines. But they are guidelines. They are not in the ordinance, so it gives the council and P&Z board some flexibility in looking at a given case to decide if there's something important enough about the given location to waive those guidelines. But again, because of those guidelines adopted by council, staff looked at it and made the recommendation to P&Z based on that council direction. We did recommend denial. P&Z board, in looking at it, determined that the site was unique enough. There was some importance and community benefit in this case to go ahead and not follow the guidelines. They have recommended approval.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Anything else on page 8? So everyone knows, I had questions before the meeting on item 8A. Item 8A, the Trevita Estates Phase 1 plan, and then Councilmember Fenter, you and I didn't have a chance to talk about this. I had some questions as it related to the plat, and most specifically, this is a citrus subdivision on Val Vista and Adobe, and it's phased. Val Vista to 40th Street is right at a half a mile, and the first phase is the eastern half of this property, which would make it a quarter mile, and Adobe is not fully improved along that stretch. And so my questions were, since they're only doing the eastern half of that, I'm sorry?
Isn't it the northern there, the northern part?
The northern part of northeast corner of Adobe and Val Vista.
Yes.
And it'll be the northern side of Adobe that's going to be improved, and the eastern half of the northern side, which is opposed to the southwestern east side of the North Star southern. Forget it.
Got it. Got it. Awesome.
Okay. The west half of the northern side, and I wanted to make sure because the phase one does not include the plat does not include the tract between the phase one line and 40th Street. And so my concern was that the developer be required to improve the entire stretch of Adobe from the entryway east to 40th Street. I want to make sure, first of all, that happened so that we didn't have a quarter mile gap of unimproved land. Mr. Wesley has informed me that the development agreement does require that. I'm still a little bit concerned as to what happens with the landscaping and maintenance and all that if phase two is never developed and that is not included in some tract, and that's, we're going to work on getting some clarification on that. Councilmember Fenter.
And I appreciate you mentioning, now that they've cleared out all the trees, I was just assuming, I mean, it looks like a bomb went off in there, but hopefully with that improvement on Adobe, because that would be a real problem to have cleared all those trees and not have that completed.
Yeah, and you can see my concern that even if the improvements go in, what happens if phase two doesn't happen?
Right.
You know, what's going to happen to that quarter mile stretch?
Yeah.
So
good questions.
We may still have a little gap in that because it's not included in this plat, and therefore it's sort of in, it's not really in no man's land, but once it gets improved, that landscaping along the northern side of Adobe would be in no man's land because there'd be nothing there. So, and also I'm still not clear on the landscaping for those tracks on the entryway. Now, Mr. Wesley, you said that right on the entryway, because those are not included either. If you look at the plat, the large center landscaping tracks are not included in phase one. And so the question is that those tracks going to be landscaped to the fullest extent, even though they're not included? I would have preferred that those tracks be included in phase one so that we make sure that as someone comes in the entryway, those big parcels to the east, which I assume are either retention basins that serve the eastern half, but I would assume they'd be grass and be fully landscaped. If you come in, you're going to have a pretty stark area there unless that. So I guess we didn't cover that in my question to you in development agreement.
Yeah, Mayor, the improvement plans show on the east side of that street that comes in off Adobe,
yeah,
that the full improvements are going in that track all the way up to that first intersection with the east-west street. Beyond that, they're not proposing to do any improvements at this time.
Right.
So that the entry will be fully landscaped on both sides of the street.
On both sides of the street. And to the north of that semicircle?
That will...
Is that also landscaped? And it's not. So the front side, fronting Adobe, the entryway will be landscaped, but the north side, which is just back and center, will not be landscaped.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Once again, in hindsight, it would have been nice if that area that tract would have been included in the plat for this one, but it wasn't. And I don't know where that leaves us. Maybe a non-issue, but if you could maybe look at that a little bit more.
I'll follow up
maybe by
with
Monday.
The applicant on that.
Yeah, like I said, it may not be a big deal, but I think the worst case is, like Councilman Fenter said, that thing gets left in limbo. Okay. Anything else on page 8? Great. Next item on the agenda is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. We have a motion by the Vice Mayor, a second from Council Member Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Nobody did anything over the summer, so we'll move on to the... got anything to report? Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you, Mayor. Wonderful grand opening of a new dog park located in Central City. It was born out of... pretty big controversy in between Councilmember Higgins' district and I about a retention basin that was being used as an off-leash type of facility for.
Oh, you said a dog park. I thought it was like a nasty park. You mean a park for dogs?
Park
I'm sorry,
dog. Dog
I misunderstood
park.
You there.
No, that's fine. Thank you. You know what? What was really nice about that is huge turnout. Our city staff. Our new parks director, helped me get Mark Hershberger, yes, Andrea Moore, others, took a really difficult situation and turned it into a real positive for very little money, tax dollars, and able to fence an area. We had a huge turnout Saturday. I've learned a couple of lessons. People enjoy the aquatics programs in this city, and people appreciate being able to recreate with their dogs. And
so if we could have a dog pool, place for dogs to swim, we would hit a home run.
It was actually suggested a small lake for the dogs to swim in. But so, you know, for on the cheap, take care of a challenge. I think we're missing an opportunity in Mesa to look at some dog park pocket parks to be able to have folks further enjoy some of our already wonderful park areas, and just a great turnout. I mean, we filled a parking lot, filled that whole facility. Staff was wonderful on it. They did it in a short period of time, on the cheap, very little tax dollars used. It was a smart move all the way. So
it was a nice break to the dog days of summer.
Absolutely a blistering day. They held it early. It was a heat advisory day, but still huge turnout. So.
There are too many funds that come out of that. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Last month I attended the summer board meeting for the National League of Cities, and the City of Mesa was praised by board members and NLC staff for their participation in National League of Cities functions, the degree to which we've worked on their entrepreneurial programs and stepping up to the plate to do pilot programs for our employees and residents. And so it was nice to hear that recognition coming from this national group, and I know we've been named a finalist for one of the municipal awards of excellence, and that really is a very key recognition of the quality work that Chris and his staff do for us. We did have a lively discussion of of immigration issues. National League of Cities is coming to Arizona next year for its annual convention, which will be, I think, Phoenix's largest group meeting. And I know they're looking forward to coming out here, and they're hoping that the city can find ways to partner with NLC in some of the programs that will be offered at that session a year from now. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
I have to share, I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to fly out to the USS Abraham Lincoln, which is a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier that was off the coast of San Diego, and spend the night and learn and wake up in the sleep to F-18s landing a few feet over my head, which was extremely scary. But and learn just the amazing job that the men and women in the U.S. Navy are doing. And average age, Mayor, out of those 5,000 people were 19 years old. So makes you feel extremely old hanging around all those young people controlling, you know, $25 million aircraft as they just run around. So lots of fun was had. And this program, go to my council member, Dean Higgins, Facebook page. It's a fan page. And check out the couple hundred pictures that I couldn't help but take because every turn of your head was something so cool. It was just amazing. So thank you.
Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Yes, sir. We just recently came back from a sister city visit to Burnaby, British Columbia, and it was interesting to note and a follow-up on Councilmember Finner's discussion about parks and innovative ways to do things. Burnaby has a unique way of being able to deal with a lot of the real estate and land issues and have a lot of parks. In fact, I believe they said 25% of their city, of their budget, they deal with parks, of green space within the city. But, of course, it's a whole different climate and landscape than we have. However,
they don't spend a whole lot on landscaping.
No.
Things seem to grow there naturally.
But they make sure they provide a lot. So we had very good interaction on talking about those types of issues of things that we can bring back to our own community, the whole purpose of why we're doing Sister Cities in the first place. So we had a very good visit up there and appreciated their hospitality.
Thank you. Yeah, and just to echo what the Vice Mayor said, it was great to see some of the innovative and some of the things they do and how it impacts their city. And I know I've got a notebook full of notes and things, and the other council members are now shuddering to think that I have a notebook full of ideas. Please, not anymore.
One more thing. When we visited their new library branch they just opened, it was interesting. They had property where a developer wanted to have a bonus because their land is so restrictive, they go vertical, and he wanted a density bonus. And so
he wanted to go 30 stories instead of 20 stories.
Developer wanted a density bonus, and so the city said, fine, you get your density bonus, you build us a library.
And
they got the branch.
Heather's not in here, but one of the things is their library director is very familiar with our libraries, and it was interesting how she consistently was talking about trying to meet our standards, and they were bragging it. Well, see, we, just like Mesa, we're doing this and this and this. So there is a real benefit when you can compare those things, operations to operations. And Burnaby is a very comparable city to Mesa. They live in the shadow of Vancouver, a major metropolitan area, and just a very interesting and worthwhile visit. Yesterday, the Vice Mayor and Councilmember Richens and Councilmember Higgins and I had the great honor to attend the 20th annual? 20th annual breakfast of the Arizona Arts and Business Council. And our Mesa Arts Center and related activities and staff were awarded the Top Arts Organization Award, which was pretty impressive when you saw the lineup and those who had been nominated. And it was a great honor. And, you know, this is just another thing that shows that there's a lot of good stuff going on in this city. And we have a staff who works very, very hard to be creative. You know, we talked about something that seems like a minor deal with the Open Line newsletter, but it's a huge deal that we've reopened that lines of communication using a very creative way to help deal with the financial challenges we've had in the city over the last few years. In the same vein, the arts and culture staff were really rewarded for the creativity they've used to maintain a level of service and even to expand in certain areas with fewer resources. You know, things like the Mesa Bucks and the you know, the programming and MacFest and the three for free, joining partnering with Target to pull that off. Very successful program now in its second year, and so just a real kudos to our staff, and another affirmation that we're doing a lot of things right. You know, we're human. We have always have areas to improve. We always will make human mistakes, but in this one, it was really a lot of fun to be recognized in front of the peers. And I got to admit that you know, we have a chip on our shoulder. People don't expect these kind of things out of Mesa, and so it's really nice to be a little smug every once in a while and say, "See, we're doing things that you only wish you could do."
That's right.
Not that we have an attitude about it at all. Not at all. No, no, not at all. And my therapist says it's just I'm doing just fine on that. So congratulations. I don't have a therapist. Oh, okay. I know I need a therapist. That's okay. We'll stop there. No. So congratulations to the Mesa Arts Center, all of our staff in our arts and our museums and our arts and culture. They do a great job, really a great job, and a great amenity and asset for our community. So thank you. Okay, anything else? Vice Mayor.
I just want to mention last week that we received the FDA approval for the light rail extension for the design phase, which is a very significant milestone in
huge
the light
milestone.
Rail. It's basically the FDA telling us that we can proceed with the actual design work as far as all the engineering and drawings and everything, and saying, go ahead, we approve it, and they'll reimburse us incrementally as we go through the process.
No, that was a huge milestone, one that was reported, but I don't think the news that went out was commensurate with the significance of the event. Really was a big deal. So thank you for reminding us of that. Okay. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, I'm here to tell the council we're back on schedule for meetings. So.
Yummy.
It's going to get pretty busy here. So first, obviously, we have study session today. We will have our council meeting Monday, August 23rd. That will be preceded by a public safety committee meeting at 3:30. So we'll have a study session prior to the council meeting. Check the packets for the time. I don't think we'll have a significant amount. We won't need to start much earlier than the regular scheduled time. We will not have a study session on the 26th because of the Lee Conference, but we'll begin again on August 30th. Monday, August 30th, we'll probably have a little bit extra time for the study session because the council won't have the benefit of the prior Thursday to review the agenda. But we'll have the Monday, August 30th study session. And then we'll continue our schedule going forward with Mondays and Thursday meetings. Also, just want to make note that on Wednesday, September 1st, I think we'll be getting this information is getting out, but we'll be sharing more of this about the open house at Falcon Field from 6 to 7:30 on September 1st. Discussing is our follow-up meeting to the Fly Friendly program. So, to share that, and then council, this has also been a very busy summer for the staff. Again, continued recognitions for the great work that our city staff is doing. This past during the summer, our procurement office was awarded the Achievement of Excellence in Procurement Award. It's an organizational excellence award. We are only one of 56 cities in the United States to receive the award. So we want to congratulate all those who work with Ed Quedens and Jim Ruiz for their efforts in achieving this award. This is the sixth consecutive time I think we've received this award, which in itself, receiving the award by itself is pretty substantial, and doing it that many times in a row is quite incredible. So we want to congratulate the staff for that. Also, you may have noticed that there's a lot of work going on around the city in construction. This has very, very much been a very busy summer in construction. I just want to give the council a sense of the magnitude of construction. There's been about 52 projects that have been underway, ranging from pedestrian paths to major street improvements, water, sewer, gas, storm drain programs. A lot of that, much of that is obviously being funded by stimulus dollars. others being funded by bond dollars. We have a fire station that is being ready to open up in the next couple of months out at the Gateway Airport. So 52 projects, 40 different prime contractors. You can imagine the amount of jobs that are being created because of these projects. And I can tell you, we took a tour of many of these projects the other day, and there are literally hundreds of men and women out on the site working in Mesa on these projects. That's resulted in nearly $70 million in projects that are underway, that have been underway in some form between June and August of this summer. So there's a lot of work going on. And then finally, Council, I want to invite Donna to come forward with her guests. Luis, is it Wakeman? Close, come on forward. To announce the city has, if you recall, the city made application for the Tree City USA program. So I think they're here to make a special announcement. Please introduce yourself. I'm sorry, I didn't do a very good job with your last name.
I'm Louise Wakeham. I'm the Urban and Community Forestry Coordinator for the state of Arizona. And I'm very pleased to be here this morning to offer Mesa another award or honor, as it were. You have been named a Tree City USA. And I want to thank, there are several of you I know who have put in a lot of work to get this done, and I've been working with Donna quite a bit on this, and it's here, it's finally here. There are a number of things you have to do to become a Tree City, and none of it's really all that difficult. It just seems to the push to do it. And one of the things that you do and that you have done is you proclaim an Arbor Day. Well, you had a big Arbor Day celebration this year. You have to have a tree board, and that has been put in place. You have to have ordinances relating to trees, and those have all been put into place. And the final thing you have to do, and this is where people seem to go, ooh, I don't think this is going to happen. You have to have a $2 per capita tree-related expenses. Well, Mesa came in at about $2.77. So you're doing very well. But you will be receiving a beautiful plaque to hang, we hope, here in City Hall. And for the... You can all see this. These will go, you'll receive two of these, and they will go at different spots in the city where you choose to put them.
We'll make sure we comply with all the sign ordinances, of course.
I was thinking about that.
I can just envision that sign being hidden behind some tree.
It happens more.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you again for having me here.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the award.
It's really nice to see the city expand and sort of branch out into new areas. And you know, this is a great accomplishment, something we need to bark about.
Excellent.
I'll send you some more.
I'm sure.
I'll go back on vacation.
But thank you and congratulations.
I'm going to make like a tree and get out of here. Thank you. No, this is great. It's always great to celebrate your successes, and every little, there's no such thing as a small success, and we're honored to be designated as that, and we're going to make sure we live up to that honor.
You can't just throw something out there, Mayor?
No. Of course you can.
Well, I just want people to know that we didn't really do anything. We're not spending any more money than we ever spent before. This isn't like we're spending money to become a tree. We've been doing these things for years. But we've never filled out the paperwork to be acknowledged. So with staff's help, we just did that extra step, and we're, you know, getting national recognition. So those are those little things that help make us even a greater city.
And we'd like to thank staff once again for their tremendous work on this project.
All right. I move we go into executive session.
Well, wait. You're skipping the agenda.
All right.
Is that it, Mr. Brady?
Yes.
Okay. Man. Ms. Crocker, are there any requests to speak from the public?
Mayor, there are no requests, but if I could, I'd just like to announce that today is the last day for citizens to vote,
in our office at 20 East Main Street until 6 p.m. today. They can also vote at the Maricopa County Recorder's Office until 5 p.m. tomorrow. Anyone who has received an early ballot and has not yet mailed it back can drop it off at our office from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, Election Day, or at any polling place in Maricopa County.
And this is, give us a chance to talk about some of the confusion we have right now. This is the first time City of Mesa has been on a fall election schedule, and so it's very confusing because we have one contested election in District 4. Council members Higgins and Summers are running unopposed. And that creates some confusion because we have partisan primaries and we have and the city elections are all nonpartisan. And so if you're an independent or if you are, I don't think there's any uncontested Republican primaries, but there might be some uncontested Democratic primaries, especially in District 4. Please come out and still vote because you have a city election that may not appear, may not jump out at you because it's a nonpartisan election. And if you're an independent, you could especially get lost because independents in Arizona can vote in the primaries, but they have to specifically request one, either a Democratic or Republican ballot, and therefore they may feel like they don't need to vote. And we have a very important election in District 4 that is neither Republican nor Democrat, but it seems to have gotten lost in the smoke and the haze of partisan politics, which is unfortunate. I won't make a political statement about what a mistake I think it was for the move to this fall election cycle. No, I won't mention anything about that. But we're living that out here in Mesa, and it's unfortunate because our city council elections are, you know, we've talked about things today and we do every week that affect the citizens of Mesa on a daily basis. The decisions we make here affect people more so than almost any other level of government because this is where the potholes get fixed. We talked about things as mundane as clogged sewer lines. It seems mundane. Catherine, don't get upset. I'm getting there, okay? Until that clogged sewer line no longer works. And then it's the most important thing in someone's life. And we deal with that on a daily basis. And it's unfortunate that in a veiled attempt to increase participation, we have actually relegated city elections to a lesser role. And we've made them partisan. And that's really a shame. That is really a shame. And that was the intent. And it's a bad, to me, it's a very, very bad move because it does not give our city elections the visibility that I believe they should have. It's important elections. So if you're in District 4, please, please, please get out and vote.
Mayor, one more item. Yeah. Just to expand a little bit, if they are independent or party not designated, and they do not want to declare a party to vote for either. They can get a nonpartisan city election that will just have the candidates running in our three districts, 4, 5, and 6.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
That needs to get out.
Yeah, it does. And it's, Vice Mayor said, that information needs to get out because there's still a lot of people who are totally unaware of that. Yeah, Linda.
The newspapers have cooperated great with us. Good. We've gotten articles in. We had an interview on the radio yesterday. And on Saturday, there's an iView column coming out in the paper.
Great. Good. Okay. Well, the bad thing is, after Tuesday, a lot of the campaign signs will go down. I know that'll really, really disappoint a lot of people. And then new ones will come up.
You really think they'll go down?
They'll go down and they'll be replaced by new ones. So, okay, we have a motion by the Vice Mayor to enter into an executive session. Do we have a second? Second by Council Member Richens. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. We're now going into executive session.